Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Tyler, a lot to talk about in that the main event segment there with the big match between Drew McIntyre and Keith Lee. We've got Retribution spoiling all the fun. A lot to digest given that entire segment with Retribution and the Hurt Business and, you know, Lee versus McIntyre happening at all. And with some decent hype, I would say, during the show tonight. But I'll leave my first question to you open-ended. Just what's your take on what WWE did there with the involvement of Retribution and how they frame them opposite the Hurt Business of all people?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of not a reboot for Retribution, but I think they are solidly a mid-card, faction within Raw and SmackDown too, depending on, who comes in there and, what show they're going to be focusing on. But it really solidified that, we're not going to see the fantasy booking of a CM Punk or someone, like a Daniel Bryan coming in and making a big return and being a faction led by a top star with, proteges below them. They're going to be, Hurt Business adjacent. And, I think that's kind of where we've all pegged them, those of us that have been watching this for weeks. But I think it just kind of re-solidified them. And, for anyone that was listening that was on Twitter, it was pretty quick to identify the members that were part of that promo in the middle of the show. So, I think it's fine. I think that's what they are. And if they can get some people from NXT to, get some time on the main roster and put them in a not embarrassing way. So that's my nice way of saying, I think this is when I say reset, I think it was a best case scenario for this group the last couple of weeks to kind of keep the core foundation of what they were and were supposed to be without making them, less than. So, it's about where they should be and what I expected. So thoroughly whelmed by them tonight.
So let's go down that rabbit hole a little bit, because mm-hmm. I think, while I agree with you that, hey, look, this is, I think they've always been kind of a mid-card level group, even though I think kind of the hype for them, at least at the onset, lifted the expectations of, hey, we're getting a new faction, we're promoting it ahead of Raw. And like, I think, automatically you kind of get in the back of your head, like, hey, this is going to be something significant. And while I think the feel of that group all throughout their presentation thus far, whether it's early in their run-ins or even the stuff that they did on SmackDown, has all screamed mid-card. But today, I'll play devil's advocate and throw back at you. Look, they're in a main event picture. They're in the main event segment. They're opposite the WWE champion. You've got Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre kind of binding together to help the Hurt Business fight them off. So could it be that this is, an elevation for them, given the surrounding cast of characters outside of the Hurt Business?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fully possible. I think I need to see it for 2 or 3 weeks in a row to feel better about that. I mean, I think that would be an interesting thing, and especially if you're building to, if you want to do a different type of match at Survivor Series, maybe have, WWE loves to have multiple Survivor Series type matches, so that'd be a way to change it up if you had Retribution versus WWE or a selection of WWE talent, and that would, could help elevate 2 or 3 members of Retribution. I think that'd be interesting, but, I wouldn't bet on them to have a long-term story in the main event, just based on how fast things change. But, I didn't dislike this. I've not liked a lot of Retribution stuff, but again, this didn't seem as hokey. And, if this continued, to build over weeks, I would, I'd be for it. I think this episode, at least for me personally, to give a big synopsis, felt different than, the last couple weeks in Raw. And it was, a show that kept me engaged almost the entire time. It was fast paced. So I think they contributed to that. So that's no small feat to keep a show like Raw interesting. So, if they keep doing stuff like this, I'm all for it. I'm all for something different.
I think holistically speaking on the show tonight, I thought there was a lot of good on the show. We'll get into some of the, you know, the bad, like Mickey James and the finish to her match against Asuka. We'll get into all that. But the one thing and that really kind of peeved me about the final segment was the fact that WWE has spent the last, I don't know, three, four months, you know, long-term storytelling with the Hurt Business, right? An MVP, bringing Bobby Lashley on board, bringing Shelton Benjamin on board, you know, really trying to cultivate themselves as a top heel group on Raw. They try to turn Cedric Alexander after months and months, and they get that job done. He cuts a, you know, on a Cedric Alexander level, I'd say a serviceable heel promo. He looked comfortable in that role. And then on the same show where all that happens, where all those pieces kind of come together and you get that Hurt Business presentation, they got the music, they got the entrance, they're in suits, they're looking like a, you know, a well-oiled team, you know, and I to see them by the end of the show, kind of the baby faces in an angle with Retribution, I don't know. I think it really just, it cuts off the Hurt Business momentum a little bit when you have that type of inconsistency in 1 3-hour show. I can't get that part out of my head. Your take on that, the fact that you have Hurt Business's heels, you know, coming out and trying to be the saviors of Monday Night Raw alongside two baby faces in Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre to fend off Retribution.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that, especially with the end. I think it's just, there's everyone has an opinion on the 3-hour Raw, and it's usually not positive, but these guys were throughout the show. I mean, you had them as part of Underground, you had them, you know, in the, not the opening promo, but right after that with Cedric doing his promo. And then you had a Bobby Lashley match. And then you had, you know, like I said, Underground. And then you had them when the backstage where they're agreeing to be security, you know, with Pearson and,
right.
And then at the end, so they're just like, they're just on the show a lot. And, you know, if you go back to, you know, the Attitude Era, SmackDown or, Stone Cold throughout the show, right? His whole story is beginning, middle, end, and that's what kind of was the cohesive tie for that show. And that's what her business has been, and which is great, but, you know, just oversaturation, you can get to that point where if they're on six segments, there might be a time where they're not, you know, thought out, the entire segment's not thought out to for the long-term well-being of the group and the characters. So, you know, I think overall they did a pretty good job making them a, you know, tough, good heel group, except for that. I mean, I agree 100%. They just looked like, you know, of all the other stuff tonight, they looked like top heels in a brand. And then this, they come out as security that they offered to be security and get paid for and come out and just, you know, catching the two top guys on the show, just really solidified them as mid-card act as well, when I think there's been a lot of positive momentum, you know, the last, like you said, 3 months to build them up is something more than that.
Yeah, and that's just the optics of them on the stage opposite Retribution and walking down and challenging them head on. It's like that to me. That just screams babyface, and I hope that they iron that out, or that there's another, you know, storyline development at some point that explains that better, because that's a sticking point for me. That type of consistency is necessary to get your angles and characters over. And you know, one time, one night's not gonna, you know, do long-term damage, but I think, you know, systemically it's an issue. What, leaving the Retribution stuff aside, you know, I think we had Drew McIntyre versus Keith Lee tonight. If Keith Lee won the match, he was gonna get the opportunity to face Drew McIntyre at Clash of Champions if Randy Orton couldn't go. I kind of thought when they announced this match over the weekend that, you know, it's a hot shot type match. They're going up against Monday Night Football. They want something big. And this certainly was that, but without any hype or build to it, what's it really going to do from a business perspective? Tonight though, like in the show, I thought they did a nice job of kind of establishing, you know, Lee and McIntyre's kind of competitive friendship and their history. I thought the promos that both of those guys cut were effective in building up the match. So I thought they did a pretty nice job, and I thought the match was really well done too until Retribution got involved. What's your take on that picture holistically?
Yeah, I think just this episode alone, I agree 100% that they, you know, started the show with McIntyre out there doing his promo, you know, setting all the stipulations for the match in the main event. And, you know, they had promos throughout the show, and then they had their brawl, you know, at the beginning of the 10 o'clock hour. So I think all that was really good to thread throughout the whole show. That's the A story. And every hour there was something there for you if you, you know, were there just for that. There's something to keep you there, which is the way that, you know, good wrestling, as we've been trained to watch it, you know, that's a good way to tell a story. Same thing with her business. Like I said earlier, you know, they're strung throughout the show because they're an important story. So I like that for a, you know, tonight thing, stipulation we can talk about, you know, with the ambulance and ambulance match with him and Randy and all that stuff. I mean, it's very WWE. And I think anyone that's not a casual WWE viewer could tell you as soon as this match was announced, this weekend, that we were going to get a no finish result. So, you know, that's kind of built into the expectations. That's why, you know, if this was another company that, you know, does finishes, I'm not trying to make this a AWWE thing, but, you know, it's just the way that it's cooked in. So that's why the end worked for me a little better than, you know, it would in a vacuum, because that's kind of just what I expect out of this, to tell a story and keep it going. I thought for sure, you know, if Retribution didn't come out, it was going to be a Randy Orton RKO out of nowhere. So I was just happy that we didn't get that for the 100th time. So, you know, so for the show, I like the storytelling that, you know, we've seen that over the past couple of weeks, it improve and be a little bit more dynamic. So I think it's real positive for the Raw writing team and who's making those decisions.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was fully expecting for this to end in a Randy Orton RKO, and you get to, you know, maybe some sort of triple threat match that way. And while we're probably headed towards the same match at Clash of Champions, I think at least it was a little bit of a curveball in that regard. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm with you with that. All right, let's pause it right there, and we'll set the table for the show, and then we'll let calls kind of drive our conversation from here on out. Lots left to discuss. Like I said, we've got Asuka and Mickie James. We've got the cage match between Dominic and Seth Rollins to get to, but lots of great topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the September 14th, 2020 edition of WWE Monday Night Raw. I'm PW Torch columnist Zach Hador covering for Wade Keller tonight. Wade will be around later on the VIP side of things with a full rundown and analysis of tonight's show on his Wade Keller hotline. For more information on VIP membership, head over to pwtorch.com right now. That's pwtorch.com/goVIP if you're interested in a Torch membership. The other voice you hear is that of Tyler Sage from the PW Torch VIP podcast of honor. Tyler, great to talk with you, and welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's our first one together, so I'm very excited. And this is the first Raw I've ever done on the post show, so excited for a long talk into the morning, East Coast time for with all the callers.
Yes, and we'll get to your show, Podcast of Honor, here in a little bit, and what I'm assuming is going to be a busy time for you with Ring of Honor coming back. So more on that in a little bit. To join us tonight, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. The phone bank is filling up here, so make sure you're pressing 1 to let me know that you want to be brought on to chat with us. Also, if you're just listening and you want to connect with us a different way, you can drop an email. We'll get to the mailbag later in the show as well. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, Tyler, with that said, if you're ready to go, we'll take the first call.
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right. We will start things off today with 615. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach and Tyler, great to talk to y'all. Sean, VFD from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How you doing tonight?
Good, Sean. How are you? What did you think of Raw tonight?
Oh, I'm doing well. Glad football's back, so that's also good. So I like getting my mixture of both, so I'm excited about that for sure.
Yes, how many screens did you have going today?
Oh man. Well, yesterday was great getting to watch Red Zone and just getting to see everything. Like that was, you know, of course it's weird with no fans, but that's obviously what you're going to get. And then tonight it's just like, oh, just being able to sit back, and I had some stuff, both things DVR'd. So I was DVR'ing Raw, and then I went, got caught up, and I was like, oh, I'm watching football. And it was great. It was fun to be able to go back and just kind of watch everything. And it was exciting, but no, the show was good. It was good. Zach, going back to what you said about Asuka and Mickey, I don't know. I mean, the match was definitely not the best, for sure. But I don't know, what do you guys honestly think happened there? Because, I mean, nothing happened. Like, she was trying to get her in the Asuka lock, and then, you know, they just, like, he literally just stopped it. And it was like, huh? Like, I have no idea what that was. I just have no idea what to even think happened there. What do you guys think happened on that to cause him to stop that?
Yeah, I have a feeling this is going to be a point that gets brought up a lot tonight, and it'll be interesting to hear what people's takes are. Like, I tried to look at the replays a couple different times. I went back on the DVR and tried to look at it to see if I could catch anything. You know, it didn't look like Mickie James was hurt. It didn't look like – I didn't think the match was bad enough where it's like, okay, we got to pull the plug on this thing either. The only thing I saw was when Mickie flips over to try to counter the move. At one point, her right hand kind of taps the mat. And the only thing that I've come up with is just the referee just looked at that and just assumed she was tapping out. But, it certainly wasn't – you know, over the top. It certainly wasn't emphasized at all on her part. I mean, to me, what it ended up looking like was she was just planting her hand on the mat to brace herself for another move. But yeah, the referee just calls it and that's that. And James was pretty kind of had an exasperated look on her face. It was really, really, just really messy and sloppy and unfortunate. And like you said, I didn't think the match was great, but it certainly wasn't bad enough where you're like, okay, we need to end this right this instant. Tyler, what's your take after examining the footage?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at it, it just seems, you know, like it was just called for no reason. So, you know, the conspiracy part of my brain just wants to go to Vince McMahon just back in Gorilla, just yelling, all right, just call it, you know, him calling it to the ref and ending the match there. But besides that, I mean, the announce team seemed to have no idea what was going on legitimately. You know, they're usually not that good at selling something. So, it seemed like, you know, and they didn't show Mickey at all, as far as I can recall. You know, then Selena came out, and she could have been hurt, and they didn't want to show her on camera, or, you know, I don't know. It was very odd. I mean, I'm sure we'll get, you know, in 5 years on a podcast somewhere with someone that was a part of the creative team or backstage for tonight, we'll get a solid answer. But you know, it doesn't seem like WWE just to call a match when it, you know, before the finish, but it certainly seemed like it happened. So, obviously you're never hoping for injury, but, beyond that, it's something weird happened. So, hopefully everyone's okay, but yeah, I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, it was weird. And I, it was unfortunate too, because I thought that they did a really nice job earlier in the show ahead of the match with, the promo that Mickie James cut. I thought that was a really just well executed promo, well timed in terms of her kind of adding some personal stakes to the match. Like, this could be my last chance. You know, I'm back for this. Like, these championship matches mean different things as you progress through your career. I thought that was like the first time in a long time that we saw Mickie James just kind of put a mission statement out there and just talk about, hey, this is what it means to win. And like, she talked about the importance of winning her match, and just to see it kind of go down the way it did. It was regardless of what happened, it just was not the way you wanted to end that kind of thing. Cause I thought they did a decent job, with the story up till that point anyway. Mm. Sean, back to you. Any, follow-up comments on that point?
Yeah, I'm with you. I definitely like what they did, given her release the video package. I wish they'd have done that when she first came back a few weeks back. I mean, kind of start with something there, kind of lead into all that. And that's what I wish they would do. They just kind of try to do it right at the very end and try to get you invested real quick. And it's fine, but they could do a lot to get you more invested before when she first gets there. And then you're like, okay, I remember who this is now. This is great. Like, she could really do something. This is awesome, you know, but they don't do that. And that really hurts it a lot for me. I wanted to ask you a quick question. What did you guys think when they said Samoa Joe, and all of a sudden people are just off now. They're not on vacation. They're just off. It's so weird. But what did you guys think of Dolph on commentary that first part of the show? Because I honestly, I didn't think he was that bad. And then all of a sudden he just goes to Raw Underground, and I'm like, okay. And then MVP just takes over for a little bit, and you know, he was fine for what he did. But it's just like, what did you think about Dolph specifically on commentary? Do you think he was all right? I thought he was decent.
Yeah, Tyler, go ahead and take that point first.
Yeah. Again, I said it earlier, so I'm not trying to compare AEW and WWE with everything, but you know, I thought Dolph was a little Chris Jericho adjacent. Not the exact same character, but kind of that, you know, boasting heelish type guy who, you know, think he's awesome. So that's, you know, his character. And, you know, the switch to MVP, you know, just like AEW on their show, they kind of switch commentators mid-show, just to kind of freshen things up, which, you know, I think is a good strategy in general for all wrestling when you're going to have a, you know, a longer show to freshen up the voices there. I mean, obviously with Cole there, it's hard to say that, but, you know, I think he did a good job. I think, you know, MVP was fine. I liked Ziggler a little bit better in that role. Just he kind of gave a little bit of a new perspective, but yeah, I thought both was good. And you know, Joe's great on commentary, so I'd love him there all the time, but, just mix it up, I think, is a positive note.
Yeah, that was my take too. I mean, I really miss Samoa Joe. I think he's really brought fresh kind of perspective and voice to the show. I think he adds some really smart credibility with his commentary to not just to the main event level angles, but the lower card stuff too. But at the same time, you know, you go week after week after week, 3 hours, 3 hours, 3 hours. I do think it's important to freshen it up. And, you know, while I don't think, you know, Dolph Ziggler wasn't, you know, Jim Ross out there by any means, but I think he brought his own, you know, flair to it. I just like the freshness. I liked seeing a new person there and hearing somebody else talk for a little while. So I'm not even sure at that point it matters who it is. I think that having that fresh voice is really important. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, so I agree. Two more just quick things I wanted to bring up and questions I had for you guys. The first was, you know, going back to the steel cage match, which I did think was a very good match. Again, I like what Dominic's doing in this role. I think he's been very good. I mean, everything he's done has been – I mean, you can tell he's enjoying what he's doing. He's doing a good job, and he's learning. But I just don't know where this is going with – I mean, that's been fine with the character he's been given. I just don't know where they can go with this. I mean, just beating up Murphy constantly and all this thing with that and – like, where do you think they're going with that? Did you like what they did tonight with Seth and Murphy? And where do you think they might be going with that? That was the first thing I had.
Yeah, I'm glad this came up. And, you know, I think the match was a good match. Again, I think it was a fine match. I think it's kind of it's wearing a little thin at this point because you've seen it in some form or fashion, whether it's Dominic against Seth or Dominic against Murphy or Dominic and Ray against Murphy and Seth. I mean, I think we've seen every iteration of this that's possible at this point. And the one note that I made when this segment was on was, where is this going? Because that's the question. And to me, I think if you're the WWE and you're looking at, you know, the Raw roster and you're saying to yourself, okay, what do we do with this? Like, to me, the only kind of direction, the natural direction you want to go with Seth Rollins is like build him up and to get him ready for Drew McIntyre again. I mean, I think that's the logical progression at this point. I thought, you know, tonight with Murphy, it's just kind of more of the same with that character. We're seeing, you know, content developed around him in terms of one week he's doing this, the next week he's running Murphy down, the next week, you know, he's talking down to him and using him to try to get an advantage of his match. But there's no storyline progression with Seth outside of the fact that he's doing these different things within this Messiah character and this Messiah gimmick week to week. I hope this is the start of something more concrete, like a more concrete direction for him as a heel on Raw. And maybe that means, you know, a mini feud between him and Murphy. There was that moment where Rey Mysterio's daughter kind of was sympathetic towards Murphy. I don't know if Murphy kind of joins the Mysterios in this whole thing now, but to me, the long game is you got to get Seth back up into that main event level, heel territory. Like, he's still a talented guy. I think you look at the matches that he's had with Dominic, you know, inside a steel cage at SummerSlam on a big stage. Like, he's still got the chops in the ring and on the microphone to do main event level work. And if it's me, that's where my trajectory is for him at this point. Tyler, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. Seth is super talented, and you know, obviously, I just look at, I mean, Dominic's talented as well, but you know, look at the matches that Seth is getting out of somebody who has you know, a limited time in the ring. I mean, it looks like $1 million. So yeah, Seth's going to do that with everybody, and I agree. He needs to be built up to go against, you know, McIntyre. It makes total sense. It's easy. And then, you know, that kind of gets you to the it depends what they do. You know, they could take him over to SmackDown during draft time and kind of freshen that up a little bit. You know, you could also have him and Keith Lee have a program if you're not going to go right to, you know, after Orton to have McIntyre. Just to give Lee a win against the established guy as well to help build his character. So whatever it is, I think Seth should be I think hopefully it was so decisive tonight that I was hoping that this would be the end, but I thought that for, you know, 6 weeks now, yeah, after SummerSlam, I thought this was over. So, and I've liked most of it. It's just, you know, a little bit like, you know, like Street Profits and, Andrade and Garza, like that felt like it went on forever. And I was, very happy when to see that kind of end tonight with the, with those guys. But, yeah, I mean, I think Seth being in the main event makes total sense, and he doesn't always have to be the champion or always be in the main event, but he's so talented that anything he's going to be a part of, I'm going to be interested in personally. So I think it's smart for him to be in the upper part of the card.
Yeah, and I think there's still a match to be had if Rey gets healthy, is to do mm-hmm. that blow-off match. Too. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go back to Rey Mysterio versus Seth Rollins one-on-one one more time, and maybe that's kind of the last kind of launching point for Seth before he gets into that kind of, you know, championship level tier. But to me, it, you know, not that there's anything wrong with a Murphy versus Rollins feud or program. I see that. This isn't a knock on Murphy. It's a knock on Murphy's place on the card. That it's almost like it's a big step down for Seth Rollins. Like, you know, Rey Mysterio, that's one thing. That's a legacy star. You know, his family's involved. It's long-term. It's SummerSlam. But man, I mean, if Rollins and Murphy goes, you know, longer than one match or maybe like a B-level pay-per-view, I mean, that's just kind of, to me, that screams, you know, a misuse of a top-tier act on the Raw roster. Sean, where do you think they're going with them?
I honestly really – I'm kind of with you guys. I really don't know. And that's the sad part is I think they've just drugged on so long that it's just like, where do they go? I mean, I'm kind of with you. I would like to see – Murphy is a baby face. That would be kind of intriguing, I guess, and have him go against Seth. But yeah, I don't know if that's the direction I would want to go in, though, because I think Murphy's been good, you know, with what he's been doing. So I don't know. I really don't know, honestly. And I just think they need to get away from just doing the same matches over and over again. I mean, it'd be good, but I just think they've got to find some other way to go, some other direction to get it kind of freshen it up again. But the last question I was going to ask you guys was about Raw Underground in general. Like, yeah, I haven't been a fan of Raw Underground overall, but I think tonight it was actually, I think this is a good thing for Braun Strowman to be in because he's been so kind of bashed, you know, as a character in general. So maybe to get him in Raw Underground, have him kind of be a dominant guy and have him go against Gustavo Cato, I think could really be, you know, so the question is, do you think they should have Gustavo Cato beat him in Raw Underground and kind of establish this guy as a big star? And where do you think they're going to go with that? And then that's really all I had, guys. Zach, you're doing an amazing job filling in for Wade when he's not there. You're fantastic. Tyler, good to talk to you as always. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Appreciate it, Sean. Thanks for making it. Have a good night. Yeah, Tyler, so what do you make of Braun Strowman in Raw Underground? I think, like, that promo that he cut on Shane before he went in, it was like, I commented on Twitter, like, where the heck was that when he was Universal Champion? Like, you know, it's like you had the yelling and the screaming and on SmackDown while he's a champion, the silly stuff with the Fiend. And here it was just, you know, a guy who wants to fight, a wrecking machine, saying, you know, line him up and I'm going to knock him down. I think that's always been the lane for Braun Strowman, and he's a SmackDown guy, so we won't delve into, you know, him on that show much. But what did you think of him tonight in Raw Underground?
Yeah, I mean, just to back up a little bit, you know, Raw Underground in general has been kind of, I think the big question has been, you know, this is not a good thing for the show if it doesn't build a star. And I think tonight was kind of the first sign that Raw Underground might have a place for somebody, you know. And I agree. I liked the presentation of it tonight too. You know, with Ziggler kind of looking strong in the very beginning, and I thought that might be a spot for him to, you know, rejuvenate his character a little bit. But you know, yeah, like you said, when Braun came in, did the promo, and then just wrecked people, and we actually set up to a match next week, which I like how they didn't just do it right there.
Yeah.
Using some of the traditional. You know, I mean, even on week-to-week Raw, we barely get any matches set up from one episode of Raw to the next. So that was nice to see. And, yeah, I mean, this kind of rehabilitated Braun's character for me after the last 6 months of him. And if, you know, there's certain people that you can do that with this different type of environment, I think it's good. And not that you need to do it every week forever. But if it's something that can, you know, you can do a couple times a year, bring it back, and it's kind of a nostalgia thing, you know, years down the line. You know, I think that's successful, and I think it's, at this point, I think we're turning the corner on it being a net positive as opposed to being a net negative for the show.
Yeah, I still am a fan of the fact that it just, it's a different look and a different feel on the three-hour Raw. I mean, that it breaks up kind of the, especially when you're in the empty arena environment and the Thunderdome environment, that's a lot of, that's just a lot of the same look and for 3 hours. And I think this does a nice job of breaking it up. So you alluded to, we got a match next week, Braun Strowman, in a promoted match. And my point with Raw Underground for all these weeks now is, you know, what's going to be the end game with it? Like you said, what are they going to get out of it? Is it going to be some sort of big angle? Is it going to be a star? You know, I think what they've set up next week kind of allows for potentially, you know, a star making moment, but it would come at the expense of Braun Strowman. You know, if you're booking it, do you take this opportunity to have Strowman put over an act from Raw Underground to elevate not only that act, but the segment as a whole that tells the audience, hey, the people that fight here are important?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. And that's it's a little bit like the, you know, Keith Lee, Randy Orton match, where I think our brain goes to, you know, what traditional WWE booking is. And that is to either have no finish to keep them both looking, you know, strong, you know, and in some parallel universe, or have the star go over to make sure the star is just as strong as they were before. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the way it's set up, I think if you have a competitive match and, you know, and it depends, you know, what is winning in Raw Underground. Is it, has it been established? Is it knockout or submission, or is it, can you pin somebody too? I guess I should know that, but,
knockout submission, I think is, or whatever Shane McMahon says. So, I guess.
So, you know, you can do that thing where you could get, you know, there's many things you can do, but, you know, I think they'll have Strowman go over strong next week. But, you know, with anything current day WWE, I'm pro any young talent that has any potential to go over someone who's proven and can take a loss, because Braun Strowman's always going to be Braun Strowman. So if you can build anybody, just like Randy Orton losing to Keith Lee, like Randy Orton didn't lose 1 ounce of anything doing that, and it made Keith Lee into a main event performer. It's so it just makes too much sense not to do it. So, you know, I would have Braun lose next week, and just for even the potential chance of there being a star built out of it.
Yeah, me too. That's what I would do too. I think you want to, you know, since there's been no context put around Raw Underground outside of that it's there and it's this kind of fight club deal, like there's not a lot else to it outside of that. And I think you want to start, you know, making it matter, making it mean something. And I think if Kato can go over, you know, you tell the WWE audience, like, hey, pay attention to the guys that are fighting here, because they're going to be, you know, important players. And, you know, Braun Strowman, yes, he's a former Universal Champion, but it's not like he's riding a wave of a ton of momentum right now. The exact opposite. And it's almost like, man, you want to, you know, get the rub that it would be to beat him. You almost want to take advantage of that before Strowman loses any more momentum at this point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's keep it going with calls. We'll move on to 410. 410, if you hear your name, please state your name and where you're calling from.
It's Reverend Keith calling from Baltimore. How you doing, Zach and Tal?
Good, Keith. How are you, and what did you think of Raw?
I thought it was very impressive, to say the least. I mean, they advanced some storylines tonight. I wanted to discuss a few things. First and foremost, I wanted to talk about the idea of having the Hurt Business step up to Retribution tonight. As I was watching Retribution take over the main event between Keith Lee and Drew, I was wondering, how come each and every time Retribution comes out, no one steps up from the Raw locker room? If you recall, that when they were coming out, at least Big E and everybody on SmackDown, you know, they took the initiative to band together. And I think that even though the Hurt Business are technically heels, I think the reason why they had them come out and step up to Retribution is to show unity and to show that they will not be pumped down. You know, it bothers me that none of the baby faces in the back, you know, i.e. Kevin Owens, Ricochet, Apollo, Street Profits, none of them come out. So I don't think that the writing team is trying to have the Hurt Business come off as baby faces. I just think they wanted to have a tough, and I repeat that, a tough group of men to come out there and step up. And I thought it made the show end on a positive note. I really enjoyed the double tope suicidas by Keith Lee and Drew. And it made the baby faces or the guys that stood up to, what, 20-some-odd members of Retribution, it made them look tough. And that's what I think, and I just wanted to say that. I don't know how you and Tyler feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right. I mean, I think that is kind of what the idea was in terms of what they're going for. I just, of all the things you've seen or that we've seen the Hurt Business do to the likes of the baby faces that you mentioned, Ricochet, Apollo Crews, even Drew McIntyre, you know, I think from a narrative perspective, it's really tough to believe that, you know, why would, like, yeah, you want to defend your turf, but why does Apollo Crews really care at this point to help, you know, the Hurt Business after all they've done to him, you know, in terms of stealing, or not take, but beating him for the United States Championship, stealing away, you know, one of his best friends. Like, I think there's just an inconsistency there where it's almost like the babyfaces can't run out to help in this situation because you have the Hurt Business already doing that. And I think that would really kind of throw things out of whack. But, you know, Tyler, you know, kind of break the tie here. Where's your head on you know, the potential inconsistency of the Hurt Business booking on tonight's show?
Yeah, I mean, I like the framing of this because if you think about it, it's, you know, two baby faces and four heel characters teaming up essentially to take out Retribution together. So, you know, they kind of put their differences aside to fight the common threat, which is, you know, a good story you can tell from time to time. So if that's what they were going for, you know, that's certainly a way to read it. And, you know, with, you know, people not going out there and stopping Retribution, you know, I mean, the promo they cut tonight, you know, was definitely supposed to be heelish. But, you know, if you're someone like a Ricochet or a Apollo Crews and, you know, you're not getting the same, you know, time on the show and all that stuff, you know, I think that Retribution message might be a little compelling. So they're not doing this at all. But I think that'd be a very compelling story to tell down the line to have some baby faces being like, hey, you know, something's that kind of sounds like my situation, you know, something like that. So they're not doing that, but that would be an interesting reason to say why, you know, a lot of the guys low on the card aren't going out and helping them because they kind of see themselves in Retribution a little bit.
Yeah. The other thing I think that could, it's not without it can be fixed in terms of just how I feel about it. Like, if that's the case and you're, you know, presenting this story where it's, hey, it's man, it's the life of Monday Night Raw against this renegade retribution group, then I think you need to, you know, you need to define that. You need to talk about it on the show. You have to have the baby faces and the heels both talking about how, hey, yeah, you know, look, we're not on the same page, but we're on the same page about this. Instead, like, it's kind of undefined where you just have, you know, a segment with the Hurt Business's heels, and then you don't talk about anything regarding retribution with them and the other babyface counterparts of Raw throughout the whole show. But then the expectation is they all fight retribution off together. So I think, you know, Keith, you're on the right track. I think that's what they're going for. I would just like to see a little more definition around it where it's like, that is the narrative. It's Raw versus retribution. And I think that's easier to get behind, and it's easier to kind of put everything else those acts have going on to the side as they fight, you know, this renegade group. Your take on anything that we said. Go ahead, Keith.
Well, I think back to WCW versus the NWO from 1997 to 1998, and I recall back then you had a band of the heels and the baby faces that stood together. And as I think the two of you mentioned earlier tonight, that I think it's all leading up to matches versus the Raw roster, or even perhaps a few members of SmackDown at Survivor Series. So that's where I think all of this is leading. Also, I wanted to point out.
Yeah, I think that's a probably good guess. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Also, I just wanted to get back to what you and Sean were talking about earlier about Braun Strowman being in Raw Underground. Obviously, he's being repackaged, but I think he is being sent down there to help put over Davocato. And personally, I would like to see a non-finish next week and maybe have them wrestle in a straight-up match inside the squared circle. You know, because if to my knowledge, Davocato hasn't wrestled in the ring on either Raw or SmackDown yet. He's only been in Underground. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. He hasn't. He has not wrestled a true Raw match yet. So, yeah, I mean, that's like I said, when you're in the ring doing business with Braun Strowman, I mean, whether it's a, you know, I think a non-finish or, you know, him going over, obviously, you know, it that speaks. That means something at this point. And even if they go to another, if they go to a true match, or even if they don't, even if you have, you know, Kato still on Raw Underground, you know, and Shane McMahon's pumping up the fact that he, you know, went the distance with Braun Strowman, I think that still will elevate him. Although if you really want to, you know, push him and push the whole picture of Raw Underground, I'm with you. I think, you know, a win for him is important. Tyler, any takes on that?
I agree 100%. I think we're on the same page there that you know, we both like them to push him in Raw Underground, just to make a new star. So yeah,
great. Keith, anything else for us tonight before we get to some more calls?
One last thing. I do believe that the match between Asuka and Zelina Vega is going to lead to someone else challenging Asuka, maybe even Tessa Blanchard, because right now she's a free agent after losing the Warrior Women's Wrestling title to Kali Rae on Saturday night at that stadium event that they had. So we all know that Zelina will not get the title, and she rarely wrestles, so I was surprised to see her even challenge Asuka. But I do believe that that's going to lead to someone else coming out of the blue to challenge Asuka at the Clash, perhaps when this match is over on the next night on Raw. And thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks very much for making it, Keith. Appreciate it. Yeah, Tyler, so Zelina Vega marching down to the ring, getting in Asuka's face. I thought she, you know, she's always been good on the microphone, so I thought her promo was good and effective. I didn't have anything. There was nothing wrong with, like, exactly what they did in that ring tonight, except for the fact that, you know, there's nothing that tells anyone at this point that Zelina Vega should be anywhere near, you know, a Raw Women's Championship match. It's just, it's so out of the blue. So we'll take this in two parts. One, just attack the segment tonight. What'd you think of it? What'd you think of Vega out there and her potentially being positioned as the, as a contender for the Raw Women's Championship? And then, you know, take Keith's final point. Is this leading to something bigger, and is it Tessa Blanchard?
Yeah. So, I mean, I like to see her out there, and I'm excited to see her as a, you know, a singles competitor, because she's super talented. Obviously we see, you know, with her interference in, you know, in the tag team matches and singles matches that she's been a manager of. So, you know, I think she'll be a, you know, a solid worker in that division. But yeah, I mean, to me, it really just like downgrades the title when you have people who haven't had singles matches just walk into the ring and demand matches. It's just, yeah, it just, it feels like we're a mile away from, I know the Sasha Bailey thing went on a lot, and it took a lot of the oxygen out of the room with the women's division. But I mean, you can kind of see why they went so long with that, because it doesn't seem like they have a lot of great ideas or options right now without them being the main story. So, you know, hopefully their match is good, but yeah, it just lower. I mean, that could be a pre-show match now, because they obviously don't have much stock in it. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And then with Tessa, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I try not to speculate on her and her situation, just because, you know, I think it's sort of a game of chicken between the two big companies. You know, obviously, you know, AEW would love to sign her sans any baggage because of her talent and their lack of depth in the division. And then WWE would obviously love to sign her to get her away. But again, she's got a lot of baggage. So I suspect wherever she does sign, it'll be, you know, a large thing, and people will look past all the baggage and whatnot. But, you know, it's something I don't want to think about it, but, you know, I don't really have an opinion on it until it's in front of my eyes. So sorry for the non-answer there.
Yeah. No, but I mean, yeah, look, I mean, Tessa signing with WWE would be a huge, you know, a huge signing, period. I mean, she would immediately inject a star power into, you know, the company and into whatever, you know, whether it's the Raw Women's Division or the SmackDown Women's Division, she would inject star power there. But as you said, she also, you know, injects those rosters with baggage. And so you got to decide if you're a company, like what you're okay with taking on. I think, you know, I don't think they set that table tonight. And look, it could happen. I think you can easily tell a story of the manager of Zelina Vega's level and quality, you know, scouring planet Earth for the single best women's wrestler to bring in to take down Asuka. You can tell that story. But, you know, just listening to what she said tonight out there to Asuka, I didn't get the sense that she was necessarily talking about somebody else. I thought she was talking about herself. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm kind of leaning at this point. But, you know, if Tessa Blanchard is on the table, obviously you have to look at that if you're WWE and pivot. Vega as a potential challenger to Asuka, though. Let's stay there for a quick minute before we go to 402 and then 443. But, you know, she's a heel wrestler. I think she's good on the microphone. But in the ring, like, her size to me is just something that's going to be really hard for her to overcome as a heel. I mean, every other wrestler that she's going to face, Asuka included as a babyface, just really towers over her. Just talk about her in-ring work and what the ceiling is for her potentially now that she's looking to be out on her own as a singles wrestler in the Raw Women's Division.
Yeah, I mean, it's not apples to apples, but you know, her as a heel kind of reminds me a little bit of early Alexa Bliss, you know, just size and, you know, they're both athletic. I think, you know, it's not apples to apples, but just like, you know, a very short person, who's doing heel, you know, working as a heel, and, you know, Alexa made it work. You know, the division was not exactly what it is now, back then, you know, that was still kind of the four horsewomen coming in, and that she was on SmackDown, which was kind of, I mean, the leftovers of the division and Becky Lynch basically at that time, when they did the split. So, and then she, you know, grew her character and really worked that, you know, heel persona on the mic and did a great job of that. So, you know, Alexa was always more is still more, you know, personality than in-ring performance, but, you know, if she can be somewhere on that level, I think she can be effective. But yeah, like you said, I mean, it's not super believable when, you know, someone that is 30%, 40% smaller than anyone she's going against and is trying to control most of the match and, you know, the other person trying to sell for them. It just doesn't behoove anybody in that match. So she'll have to do a lot of heel things that that are underhanded to make it work. And that can get old pretty quick if you have a lot of matches with somebody.
Yeah, the Bliss comparison is a good one. And I honestly, I think if she gets to that level, and I'm not saying she will or won't, but if she does, you know, that's probably a big win for mm-hmm. WWE at this point, given what Alexa Bliss has become. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll keep it rolling here. 402, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Sam from Nebraska.
Hey, Sam, what'd you think of Raw tonight?
I guess I didn't think it was a particularly strong episode. I was curious to get a little talk about the Aleister Black Kevin Owens match and how, unlike most times where Retribution has interfered, when they kind of like did the light flickering and stuff, it actually led to Owens winning. If you guys think that there's anything behind that, I think that's a really bad idea, but I was just curious what your guys' thoughts on that was. Along with Aleister's dumb mask that he takes off before that's covering his eye, I don't know.
Yeah, boy, this is something I had flagged to make sure that we touch on, and you know, we got into a couple conspiracy theories already, but yeah, Tyler, I mean, do you read into the fact that Kevin Owens won his match after the Retribution lights flickered out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's so uninspired that I hope it's not anything, because it's kind of, I don't know, if we backtrack a little bit too, like his promo, just for the weirdness factor, his promo before the match started where it was like, just like so terribly written. I know that, you know, he doesn't write his own stuff, but like, cause I'm Kevin Owens. And that was like the draw of the line. Like, I thought that was horrible. And then like Aleister was like definitely like a foot away and then like walked out in the frame.
Yes.
Like, it was so, so weird. But yeah, I mean, the one thing I like is that someone decisively won this match. I think it's the only positive I can take from it. At least we didn't get, you know, I mean, I guess not decisively because it was the light flicker. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Owens is part of Retribution. It would just be so weird. But I mean, he's super talented and they're not doing anything with him, with either of these guys. So if they're doing anything and changing and doing something with them, like, you know, there's more character development in Cedric Alexander right now, which is great. I love Cedric. But, you know, for, you know, someone like Kevin Owens, who's, you know, done more with the company, it's odd that they're just like totally not doing anything with him or a guy as talented as Aleister Black. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up the backstage vignette. It's like, he must have been standing right next to him, like a foot away. Like, I rolled my eyes and almost hucked my phone at the TV because I was just like, you got to be kidding me with this. But I'm with you. I don't think that they're going down the road of Kevin Owens, you know, leading Retribution. That's just not the gut feel that I get about it at this point. However, you know, if you look and listen kind of the words and kind of corporate phrasing that Retribution has used in their promo, you know, you could say a lot of those exact same things about the state of the Kevin Owens character right now. So, you know, I'm not going to completely outright dismiss it. I think we'll want to see, you know, what happens here, you know, in the next couple weeks. Is it, you know, obviously are they leaving breadcrumbs and this is the first one, but time will tell on that. But as of right now, yeah, I'm not ready to say that it's, you know, I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket as of yet, Sam.
Any other
thoughts?
I'm definitely, I mean, I don't really think it is either. It's just something I thought was interesting. The other thing I was thinking, which was like awkward and kind of weird to me, was at the end of the cage match, how the Mysterios were just like staying around Dominic and just like, it's not like there was like, it wasn't like he was hurt. I don't know. They were just all like touching. I don't know. That was just super weird to me. I don't know what you guys thought about that.
My thought was, Dominik has taken like three stomps before. That's like a weekly affair on Monday Night Raw for him. And why is everybody concerned this time? No, I mean, I think they're trying to just tell the story of sympathy with Dominik, you know, and I think, you know, Dominik pulls that off well. Rey Mysterio always pulled that off well too. The one thing I'll kind of spin that comment into though, Sam, and I'll toss this to you, Tyler, what did you make of Rey's daughter kind of checking up on Murphy as she got into the cage?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a weird sentence to say out loud.
Yeah, it was obvious what was going on, and I didn't feel much of anything, which is not great because you want to feel, you know, that's the whole thing of wrestling is you want reactions, and they just haven't built the buddy character, and you know, she's not gotten much screen time. You know, to bring it back a little bit, you know, I was thinking of a comparison feud of if Seth and Murphy have a feud, and it the only thing that came to my mind was right after the Miz lost the championship to Cena, you know, way back in the Wayback Machine, and him and Alex Riley had their feud, and that didn't go well for anybody. So that's why I would avoid a feud between those two. So I guess that's my my initial thought is like, oh, I really don't want a Seth and Murphy feud, and that's where I think it's going to continue this, where you have, you know, Dominic's sister and Murphy, and just, you know, so I think it's a negative in a lot of ways if they keep this going in that direction.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm willing to kind of maybe give it a little bit more leeway to see where they go with it than you are. But as I said earlier in the show, like Murphy against Rollins, you know, if it's anything more than a B-level pay-per-view match, I think that's a step down for Seth, especially with the work that he's doing. Sam, did you catch that moment between Rey's daughter and Murphy, and what did you think of that?
Yeah, I think it's maybe she just seems so young to me. It's kind of uncomfortable.
Because
I mean, you know, Murphy definitely comes off as like a full-grown man, and I mean, I don't know. I guessing she's a teenager, so I don't. I'd rather not, especially because it's not like you, her or Mother Mysterio have had a whole lot of. They haven't shown a whole lot of great range or anything, so I'm just maybe at some point we can just kind of move on from the family Mysterio. At least the extended family Mysterio is kind of my hope at some point. Other than that, I don't have a whole lot else, and just go VIP and read all the great stuff on the Torch.
Appreciate it, Sam. Thanks for calling. And pwtorch.com/govip if you're interested in checking us out. Sam, thanks a bunch.
Absolutely.
All right. 443. You are up next. 443. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, it's Kyle from Butter Mailing. How you doing?
Good, Kyle. Thanks for calling. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Really, a couple of things here is that first is with the Riot Squad and Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. I'm kind of glad that match is happening on a pay-per-view where every title has to be defended, and they didn't waste it on Raw, so that's a good thing. I'm kind of glad that happened, and I do hope that the Riot Squad win to win the tag team titles, because I know a lot of people like Nia Jax. I mean, really like Shayna Baszler, and you know, Nia Jax is just there at this point, but they have no business being tag team champions. I just think they put the titles on them because of the stuff with Sasha and Bayley, and the Riot Squad is more of an established team, and more, and they're just going to be traditional champions, because I think you'll see another title change at Classic Champions. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, Tyler, why don't you take that first?
Yeah. I think that'd be good too. I mean, I think getting Baszler in the title picture with Asuka next would help liven up the Raw Women's Championship scene, which, as we talked about a couple seconds ago, needs some livening up. I think SmackDown, obviously with Bayley and Sasha, is covered, so that's good. And and then with the, you know, same thing with, you know, I talked about it again earlier too, with Sasha and Bayley not having all the belts, but you can see the, you know, there's just not a lot of teams built up in you know, women's tag teams built up that, you know, would be something that is going to be a draw. I mean, I like Riot Squad, but, you know, they're at a lower level than they were 3 years ago. So that's tough, but, you know, I think getting the belts off Nia and Shayna would be what I would do. And then, you know, maybe build up some team in NXT and have them kind of tour around the company. And I think that'd probably be the best way to use those belts after that. But yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like what they've done with this program as a, you know, obviously this isn't a main event level program or even upper mid card, but as a, you know, a low card, you know, women's tag team title program, I think they've, you know, put the pieces on the chessboard, you know, enough. I think you've told the kind of the story of Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott coming back together, as choppy as that was. I think you've got them now to a point where, you know, okay, they're solidified as a team. I think Shayna and Nia Jax, if you've listened to this show or any of my other Torch audio to this point, I was not on board or I think the way in which they were brought together was effective. But once they had that match in the ring at Payback, I think you really saw kind of what they can do as a tag team, as just a powerhouse tag team. I thought that match really worked and kind of knocked the cobwebs off of what happened when they were brought together. It, you know, to me, it's a tough situation to analyze because Shayna Baszler still has this higher ceiling of she could be, you know, a centerpiece heel on Raw with the Raw Women's Championship. And I think when that's out there and that's available, you know, my mindset goes to, okay, you got to book her in a way that gets her there. And obviously that means she has to lose the tag team titles. And it's almost, but at the same time, you want to keep her credible. You want to keep her as an act that's a winner. And so I think I would extend them a little bit longer than you guys would. I think you got to kind of run through the Riot Squad and maybe, you know, another pay-per-view after that, just so this the audience knows and is, you know, used to seeing Shayna Baszler on a winning pedestal, you know, and not as, you know, somebody who wins and loses and is kind of 50-50 in that regard. I think if she's going to be that centerpiece heel champion that she can be and that we saw her be in NXT, like the biggest thing for her is that in-ring credibility. And I think now that you have her on that tag team path, I don't think it's something that you stay with long-term, but I think it's something that you want to use as a technique and as a strategy to just present Baszler in a way that screams, hey, I'm dominant. And whether it's the tag team division or singles, you know, nobody can beat me. So I'd give it a little more time to breathe than you guys would. Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, I guess we got to disagree on that. It's like, I don't know. I feel like the Riot Squad to me, I just feel like you want to build them up this hard. You already had them the more contenders. I don't know. I just feel like they should just win the titles and move on from that. But my other point is with Asuka, really. It's just every time I see her now at this point, it's just not good. I see what they'd be doing with Sasha and Bayley on SmackDown. That's the most compelling story in women's division on both brands right now, and Asuka's the champion. It's just not working for me at all. And I thought too, you know, they were gonna have Bianca Belair show up and declared that she would have faced Asuka at Clash of Champions or something, not Zelina Vega, but, you know, Bianca Belair disappeared again after a team with the Riot Squad 3 weeks ago. I really assumed that after she teamed with the Riot Squad, it would be the next week she would go toe-to-toe with Asuka saying, I'm going to face you for the championship at some point and all that stuff. That's what I thought was going to lead to, but she again disappeared. I don't know why Bianca Belair disappeared again. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, especially as you're, you know, we're breaking down kind of the women's division here and talking, you know, Zelina Vega in a championship contender position. You know, you got to wonder, Tyler, where does Bianca Belair fit into all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at, you know, Bianca and Shayna and Asuka, I mean, those are, you know, they were essentially the foundation of NXT post, you know, the Horsewomen. So, and all of them have had rocky, if not poor, booking level. I mean, Asuka had good booking when she first came up, but, you know, I think they all kind of fall in the same boat of, you know, I think a lot of the fan base has expectations for them And they weren't met, and then we get deflated on where they are, and then eventually underwhelmed by their performance. And I mean, Zach, like you said, you kind of sold me on your booking there for Shayna to make her a winner, because I think she kind of needs that. So, you know, if we were in a booking meeting, you would convince me to pull the trigger on her retaining. So congratulations there. But
I'll call Vince right now.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I forgot about Bianca Belair. So I forgot she was even a possibility. So that's how poor she's been placed. So I don't know why that is, but it is kind of a systemic issue with, you know, talent from NXT in general, but especially the women's talent. It just, you know, with a lot of it, I think when you get up there, that's when they're going to be the most hot as an act, is when they've come up from being popular in NXT. And you kind of just ride it just like they're doing with Keith Lee. So it's just kind of unfortunate. But I think WWE for too long has, you know, done a match or built somebody up 6 months to a year after they should have. And then it's not as impactful. But, you know, hopefully that's changing. It seems to be good the last month or two. So I'm hopeful for the future.
Yeah, Bianca Belair is one of those talents that I think just has so much potential, and the sky's the limit. And she's one of the people that I'm like, all right, she's one that you don't want to bring up until you have something for her, you know, because you want her to come in and, like Keith Lee in a lot of ways, and just sink her teeth into something big and something important and something that, you know, kind of immediately puts her on the pedestal of being a top tier act in the company. And so, you know, I'm okay with not featuring her, you know, until you have that opportunity for her. You know, I'm fine with that, and holding back until it's there, and then, you know, launch her right in and keep her at the top of the division for the next handful of years. But you can't have it both ways. You can't kind of phase her in, phase her out, phase her in, phase her out. You got to decide, and you got to go with her. And I think she's so talented to kind of be jerked around the way that she is, because she can bring so much to the table. So yeah, so Kyle, I'm with you. I think you really want to refocus attention on her, because I think she's got that potential. And then to touch on your point in regards to Asuka, I honestly had a different opinion of watching her tonight. When you kind of think about what Asuka was prior to the empty arena era, you know, I think she's mid-card at best, kind of brought in and out to kind of work championship programs and be a carpenter in that way for the top stars. Like she was around the title and around the main event in the women's division, but never really the fixture. And well, certainly I wouldn't classify her as a fixture of Monday Night Raw in terms of like, hey, she's a top tier talent on the level of Becky Lynch. You watch how she's presented. She gets the big entrance. She gets pyro. She's the champion. They promoted her match for all week long, you know, as a kind of a pinpoint for the night in terms of why you should tune in. You know, that's a lot of boxes checked in terms of how I read Vince McMahon feeling about her and how WWE as a company feels about her and what she can do. I think she's kind of turned a corner in terms of, you know, being infinitely better than she was 6 months ago. Tyler?
I agree with you on the presentation that they're taking it more serious, and like she's a real star presentation with her. But, you know, I'm somewhere in the middle. I think she can have a good match. I just think there's a expectation that we have as fans for her, or at least I do. And I don't think she always meets up to them. I think she kind of, she works up or down depending on who she's going against. So, you know, I thought tonight was not the best match in the world by far. And, but she's really capable of a great match. So I think she's a little inconsistent, and I've kind of built that in with her in general, but you know, it's better than, yeah, like when, you know, she was announced that her winning Money in the Bank meant she was champion, and then she jumped and screamed around the ring for 10 minutes. Better presentation than that. That was pretty bad. So yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. All right. Kyle, back to you for any final comments.
Well, I don't know. I just for me personally, I'm just not an Asuka fan at all. I just don't really care much about her as a character. I think her wrestling when she faces Becky or Sasha is really good, but as a character, I just don't get her. I'm just not a fan of it. And also one last thing about the virus going to Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. I get what you're saying, but I think for me personally, you build up the virus squad to be in this level right now, and I just see Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax as traditional champions. Like, I don't see this long term, and of course you don't would be that short, but that's how I see it. But I guess we'll see a class of champions, but they fuck off.
Yeah, we'll see. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it as always. Okay, we will finish off here with 305. 305. Well, just for the formality's sake, state your name and where you're calling from.
Javier from Miami. How's it going?
Good, Javier. Good. Do I not have heat with you anymore?
Well, no, but I mean, you got. I mean, had something gone awry, I think we would have been meeting in Raw Underground.
fair enough. What did you think of the show tonight?
It was good. Hey, Tyler, we're going to have to talk about the Wobbly Walrus at some point.
Yes.
It was fine. There are a couple things I liked. I liked Drew McIntyre's opening promo. He made the belt seem important, you know, that he's willing to, you know, put his health on the line for the belt. And then him and, you know, with his promos with his skits with Keith Lee also put over the belt, you know, that it you usually don't have them talking about the championship as it being important. And that helps raise the importance of the belt, which is what you kind of want to do.
Yeah, that was really effective in my eyes, too. I really liked that you started the show off with that. You started the show with the champion, Drew McIntyre. It's a big show, you know, lots of stuff going on, but you start there. You start with him, and he kind of sets the table for everything that's going to happen. And then, like I said, like over the weekend when they announced the match, I was like, really? They're gonna go to this right now with not – you know, not a lot of story, if any, you know, between Lee and McIntyre, and just the promo work around the championship between both guys. I really, you know, strung the narrative along from the start of the show to the end. So, yeah, I thought it was just really effective promo work, and kind of, you know, you don't know how over Drew McIntyre really is because you don't have an arena full of cheering fans to tell you that you're in the right place there. But when you watch him cut a promo like that, and when you watch him cut those promos backstage, like, yeah, you know, I don't know there's a guy in Raw that's doing it better right now, Tyler.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think with both of them, I mean, just seeing their interactions and their, how much they, you know, care about that title. It feels refreshing. To have people care about that. And, you know, I think, you know, the ideal thing obviously would be for these two guys to be, you know, chasing that belt for the next 3 to 5 years and being, you know, some, you know, pillars of that main event scene. So this sort of stuff can be, you know, kind of fun looking back that, like, you know, their interactions, if they're about to have a big match at a big pay-per-view, and you can go back and they had this interaction on this episode of Raw where, you know, they just both got in the scene together. And, yeah, it was good. I mean, they're both doing great work. And he said, Drew, he's been on so much and he's been such a good babyface character, which is really hard to do. I mean, you know, it's not easy to be a heel, but there's things you can hit to guarantee heel success. And there's things that, Drew's doing that, it's pretty hard not to cheer for him. So I think with how much TV time he's had and how good he's been doing, I think he's going to get a big reaction whenever we get crowds again.
Yeah, I think so too. And the other thing, I think, you know, he's able to walk, you know, the fine line of, you know, being that championship babyface going up against another, you know, babyface that's just kind of coming on board on Raw. And he did that successfully. I mean, that's tough. It's tough to not act too heelish in that regard. And I think you really got the sense and this is, you know, a plus and a positive for both him and Keith Lee, that they were both able to kind of stay in their babyface lanes. And this was really, you know, two friends, you know, competing, and it got a little heated. And we all, you know, that's a very kind of human thing. We've all been there before. And I thought they just did a nice job of walking that line tonight. And I thought it helped the stakes of the match when it was time for that to happen. Javier, back to you.
Yeah, and but the only thing I found, I would say, I think I'd use the word disappointing, is that he wants it to be an ambulance match. So it looks like that's what we're getting. And I've been so into the feud between these two, I just want a regular match between them.
Between Orton and McIntyre?
Yeah.
I'm with you. And that's my opinion 9 times out of 10 with this kind of thing. I think if you do the work on the front end and you get the match where you need it to be from a hype perspective and a promotional perspective, you just need the match and the bells and whistles, especially something just so, I don't know, archaic, like a ambulance match where no one really knows exactly what it means and how you win. I think that can be so, you know, up in the air and back and forth that, yeah, I don't know that this needs it. Tyler, what did you think of that stipulation being announced?
Yeah, I mean, if I recall, the reason Drew even gave Orton a rematch before, you know, the stuff happened at Payback or before Payback, it was because Drew wanted to, you know, hit the Claymore and pin him with his signature move. And now, you know, a couple weeks later, he's making a stip where he can't, I mean, he could beat him with the Claymore. So I guess you can get around that logic, but you know, it's counterintuitive to make it this kind of match. And so from a story perspective, I don't like that. From kind of an interesting way to have a rematch is kind of thrown out the window. And then also just from my personal preference, if I could get rid of one thing, two, maybe, it'd be the door in a cage in a WWE match. And then it would be an ambulance step. I just said, they're always, as you just said, they're always just confusing. Is it when the door shut? Is it when it drives away? If it's the Fiend, I mean, you got to wait till it turns red before someone comes out. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I would like to see a straight up match between these two, but they must be saving that for down the road somewhere. Cause obviously they work really well together. So I guess that's yeah, the only thing I could think of.
There's something so definitive and satisfying of, you know, that hitting that Claymore in a match and then the mm-hmm. 1-2-3 that comes after it. And I think mm-hmm. if you're going to like use Randy Orton to help elevate Drew McIntyre to just, you know, kind of put a significant, you know, heel opponent on his resume for this title reign, I think you want to do it with that definitive nature, like the Claymore and the 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. And I don't think, not that an ambulance match victory isn't meaningful. Sure, it is. It's just not as just definitive as the Claymore 1-2-3 would be in my eyes. So it begs the question, you know, is this a way that they can protect Drew and put the belt on Randy though?
I mean, I guess so. I guess I never really considered that the rematch would lead to Orton getting the belt, especially with everything that's happened. It just feels, I don't know. I guess for me, it doesn't feel like a good direction for anybody of the three. I'm involving Keith Lee in all this stuff too, because he's been so integral to all the main event stuff. But I don't know. I read it as they want to save a one-on-one match with a finish between the two of them for a later date because they like working with each other and you know, they kind of want to save it for a live crowd at a big spot, I think, down the road. But I mean, it's always a potential for a way to, you know, give the heel the win with him cheating. You know, if Randy's in charge of retribution or something like that, you could always do an angle like that, which, you know, would not be very well received, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I'm throwing it out there just as a point of discussion. I'm not sure that they're going that way, but
mm-hmm.
it's certainly something to think about. And
mm-hmm.
I guess Javier, I'll throw to you on that. What does the stipulation tell you about the future of that program?
Well, I mean, my theory has been for a while that at some point Randy's winning the title, because I think WrestleMania is going to be Randy and Edge for the title. That's been my going theory for a while now. So I'm thinking that McIntyre ends up losing the title and then probably ends up on SmackDown to feud for the other title.
Opposite Roman?
That's kind of been my been my theory on that. So, because I mean, those two, now that Roman's a heel, he is a heel, right? I'm not imagining this.
No, it's real. I think it's real, Javier.
Okay, all right. just have to ask. So putting those two together, I think that'd probably be your best WrestleMania bet on that end. So an Edge versus Orton and a
and they Reigns McIntyre, probably the your best bet for WrestleMania. And you know they've always booked their biggest matches. And that way, I mean, I thought originally it might have been Reigns and The Rock because it was the whole L.A. thing, but I don't think, you know, they're going to be doing it in L.A. So,
right.
So yeah, so that's my going theory of what the WrestleMania match is going to be.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess it's worth throwing out there too, guys. Like, you know, we could be looking at some sort of triple threat at Clash of Champions too, with the kind of shenanigan finish tonight. You know, Keith Lee could easily, you know, come out next week and say that he's got a claim to that championship match. I think that's on the table also. What else, Javier? Anything else for us tonight?
Well, and a crazy thought that occurred to me it earlier during the show, that, but you know, with how it ended, it might be different. But you know, the WWE does screwy stuff like this anyway. What if Keith Lee is the one behind Retribution? Because I had heard a rumor from somewhere that he might end up being heel.
Yeah, I mean, it crossed my mind. It crossed my mind when everything was going down tonight. But I will say that even though it was there for a split second, as soon as they started fighting him and he fought back, and the end in which, you know, they did the suicide dive over the top rope in tandem with Drew, it kind of like left my mind right after that. I certainly wouldn't rule it out at this point, but it would be, I don't know, a pretty entertaining swerve. But given how they booked tonight's angle, I'm not putting my chips on that. But Tyler, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think it'd be an interesting swerve and something that would really surprise me. So I think that by itself would be an interesting and good thing to do. But yeah, as soon as he had any sort of offense against them without any hesitation, without a camera shot, I think that kind of puts it to bed just the way WWE does things. But yeah, I think it'd be really interesting if they did that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, at this point, it'd just be super swerve. But it could also explain why he has that horrible generic music if they're going to win to the tournament. He'll give him an actual real song, like a heelish song.
Yeah, and he'll get to wear his NXT attire once he joins them, too. He won't have to wear the singlet thing, so.
Yes. Oh, gosh. you're so right. He's got just such a unique look and presentation, and it's like I don't want him to run from that. I want him to embrace that because it made him a star in NXT.
Well, since Javier's here, it'll be like when Okada took his pants off and it went back to the shorts, the crowd was very excited. So it can be a moment like that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Javier, anything else for us tonight before we tackle this mailbag here?
Yeah, well, since you guys brought up the stats and how the finishes are, this might not be a regular feature because it depends on how I feel about it. But I looked over the matches for the month, and so far, including today, they've had 25 matches. 10 of them have had clean wins. Of the 25.
Sorry, I missed this. Who had 25 matches?
Yeah, WWE. There have been 25 matches.
Oh,
and
I got
only
it. Got
of
it.
Them
okay.
Have been clean
okay.
Wins. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So,
wow.
Yeah. And three of those had something after the match where the losing group got something back. You know, an example would be Otis and Tucker beat Miz and Morrison, but then after the match they stole the lunchbox or the briefcase, so they get something out of it. So of those 10, three of them had something happen afterwards. 8 of them were protected finishes, like the lights going out during the Aleister Black KO match, leading to the stunner. Something like that, or a distraction, you know, that, you know, like someone saw a squirrel and you know, got hit by something. 5 of them were, we shouldn't have booked this finishes, which are the main event, you know, and like a double disqualification or something like that. And 2 of them were just, I don't know how to categorize them. one was the Ivar, was it Ivar who got hurt? Yeah, it was Ivar,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, Yeah, so the Ivar one and then whatever happened with Mickey James. You know, I have no idea how to categorize those. But, yeah, so of the 25, only 10 of them were clean. And 5 of them came today.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the fact that 10 of them are clean, I mean, to me, and I've talked about it on this show and in my shows, like, that's an issue. I mean, it's really hard to when you're trying to just say, okay, hey, look, we're gonna hot shot a big match to get a number, you know, in a rating. You know, if you have your audience conditioned the way they are now, which is everyone sees that, you know, social media message go out on Saturday, Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre are gonna have a match. You know, the initial response isn't, oh, I gotta see that, I want to see who wins. It's, oh man, you know, that's not gonna be a clean finish, and that's how are you gonna get out of it? And that's a problem as you're trying to build an audience and to compete with, you know, whatever, the NFL or any other, you know, big sporting events or just whatever else is on, you know, television. If you're trying to promote, the audience has to trust that what you're promoting is gonna be worth checking out and worth sticking around for. And I think, you know, hearing that out loud, 10, you know, of all the matches that they have and all the shows and all the hours of wrestling that's on WWE's weekly calendar, 10 finishes. I mean, that's, you know, hearing the numbers behind it, that's an issue for sure.
Oh, and that doesn't include Ronda Rousey, by the way.
Tonight, Javier? Oh, huh? You didn't. Oh, what? Come on, you got to step up your game and get the Raw Underground count in there. Okay.
Yeah, I got to read the reports more closely since they're not separated. So, and I'm not sure how to count that KO Aleister Black one because that I don't know if that counts as three matches or just one 30-minute match. I'm going to see all of. So, but all right, guys.
Well, it's your project. You can do what you want, but I think you're committed now. You know, now you know.
Yeah, now, yeah. This is one more thing I don't have time for, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
YOLO.
All right. Thanks for calling, Javier. Always good talking with you.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
See
you. Yeah, Tyler, we'll head to the mailbag here in a second, but yeah, I mean, that's some good data, some good numbers. I mean, what do you make of that? 10 finishes in all the matches that they've had.
Yeah. I assume that doesn't count NXT. I didn't ask him that, but is that just Raw and SmackDown, do you think?
I think so.
Say that? Okay.
He didn't say
but yeah, usually I say it's a little cleaner finishes. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised if you made me put a percentage on it. I mean, what's that? So that's a lot of math right now, but that's more than 50%, obviously. So that's 65% of the time, somewhere in that range, it's not a clean finish. So yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. That's what I would guess. And, you know, Javier said that tonight, 5 of those, you know, 5 came tonight, and I think that certainly helped the show, you know, be overly positive compared to the last, you know, if you look at the last 3 months, I think this is one of the better Raws that we've had, and that's no small part in getting, you know, people decisive victories over people. It's kind of how the sport works, so, you know, that's why we've had, you know, multiple years of this, and why no one feels special, because, you know, no one is special. So you got to make people special. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well said. All right. We'll close out the caller portion of the show there. Thanks for everyone who called in and contributing. And we'll be back in 1 second with the mailbag.